You're listening to Tuesday Night's Arena. Nora Holt's 9 years is a long time was written over 80 years ago in an Ireland that was overtly concerned with morality and religion. The story was about a married couple that make ends meet by allowing men to pay the wife for sex. Unsurprisingly, this book, along with several of Holt's other works, was banned under the Censorship of Publications Act. In fact, Holt's work, would you believe it, was banned more times than the work of Edna O'Brien. Joining me in our regular Where Do I Begin slot this evening is Louise Kennedy, and she's going to suggest where we can start with the sometimes forgotten writer, Nora Holt. Where did you come across the work of Nora Holt first of all, Louise?
Hi, Sean. Well, I was thinking about doing a PhD in English, and I was looking for a research topic that might be interesting, and I wasn't really getting anywhere with it. And then I came across one of Nora Holt's stories in Sinead Gleeson's 2015 anthology, The Long Gaze Back. So the story is from her third and final collection of short stories, Cocktail Bar, that's actually been reissued by New Island Books. It's a book from 1950. And the story is, I mean, it was really quite political in ways. It's about a young girl who is partially deaf, who's at work, and has this like kind of mortifying experience when she's asked to make the tea in the office. And I just thought that the writing was like really sparky and engaging and a little bit confrontational somehow as well, even though it's in this quite sort of mid-century sort of chipper tone. And I just thought it was great. So I looked into it a little more and read a few more of her books. So I've spent the last 4 years doing Nora Holt, basically.
But, you know, yet again, here we are talking about a woman writer who has disappeared practically off the face of the earth until an anthology like Sinead Gleeson's or indeed other anthologies bring these voices back into our consciousness.
May have come across Nora Holt in Evelyn Conlon's anthology, Cutting the Night in Two, which I think might be from 2002, I think. And it was that story, 9 years is a long time, that Sinead had come across. So it just kind of shows you the importance of anthologies, you know, because it's, I suppose it's a way of giving people kind of a taster of various different writers. I mean, it's possibly more difficult to argue for republishing or reissuing a novel, whereas, you know, a short story is a little more manageable.
Yeah, but when you read the short story, you then might want to get the novel, which I suppose is part of the joy.
Absolutely,
Which is what I, let's get a little bit then of Nora Holt's own background. Quite tragic, really, in terms of the losses she had as a child to start out with.
Absolutely. Yeah. So she was born in September 1898 to an Irish Catholic mother and an English father who was a little older. So I think what had happened was the mother, on the day of her 21st birthday, walked into a registry office on the quays to marry a man in his 30s who was a Protestant, an English Protestant. But he actually, it turns out, it was like even worse than that. He was a theosophist. Do you know what I mean? So it was all a bit kind of bohemian. It meant that I think there were sort of problems with the you know, Nora Holt's mother's family didn't approve of the match. And it meant that, I mean, I guess in a way they were a little isolated. So when she was nine, her mother died of TB. And then about 6 months later, her father died of complications from flu.
Wow. And she was nine at this stage?
She was nine and her brother was about 10 and a half. So she just had one sibling. So the children were sent to live in England with her father's family. But I think really they were put in boarding school pretty much straight away. And Holt wrote about that. Not a lot, but I mean, she referred to it once or twice. Arlen House reissued one of her books. It was a 1935 book called Holy Ireland, which was very, I mean, I wouldn't say it was loosely based at all. I mean, it was fairly heavily based on her mother's story. And in the book, in the reissue to the book, which came out just not long after Holt died, she'd actually written a preface to it and said that she really referred to kind of religious bigotry and also said that she'd been put in boarding schools and, you know, and something like being of a rebellious nature, it wasn't to my liking. So I don't think she had a great time.
Well, she had so much to deal with, and let's hold off on the other bit of that particular tragic part of her life, because I want to talk a little bit about her apprenticeship at the Yorkshire Evening Post. I'm guessing if she was born in 1898, she went to the boarding schools and all of that around the time of her ninth birthday, so I suppose 1907, 1908. Yeah. So in the early teens then, was that when, as in the early 19-teens, was that when she headed off to be this apprentice in the Yorkshire Evening Post? What sort of stuff was she doing there?
I think it was mostly clerical stuff, but they let her write, you know, the odd sort of book review and stuff like that. And she was allowed to do the odd little kind of social column and stuff. It was all probably, you know, sort of the sort of things that you'd give girls to do at the time. Yeah.
And then 1918, her brother survives the war.
Yeah, it took me a while to figure out what had happened to him because, you know, he was there and then I was looking at various records and I couldn't find him. But I knew that he'd been old enough to enlist. And I couldn't find a record until I found a register. It's called a Register of Soldiers' Effects, and it was from barracks in Hounslow. And he had fought, now from what I can gather, because of the regiment that he was in, I think he fought at the end of the Somme, and he was there for 6 or 7 months. He must have been injured because his service was broken for a while, and then he was sent back to the front again, and I think he was at Passchendaele. And I think he survived that and he committed suicide. There were two different records and the dates didn't match, but it looks as though he committed suicide on New Year's Eve 1918.
Yeah. So again, and Nora Holt is dealing with all of this. She's lost her parents and she's lost her brother now. And she's still, if 1918, she's still, she's still in her
she
teens,
was 20.
Maybe heading towards
she was 20,
20 at this stage. Mm-hmm. So she comes back to Ireland in 1957 then. Well, that's much later. So we've got a lot of ground to cover actually before that.
I think after that, she continued to do journalism and some secretarial work, and that's how she supported herself.
Right.
And she contributed to various publications, like she wrote reviews for the New Statesman. She wrote sometimes for the Times, but they didn't give her that much to do. She wrote for a left-wing journal called Time and Tide. And then in 1928, she published her first short story collection.
Which is where you're sending us as our potential first dip into Nora Holt. Poor Women is the title of this story.
Yeah.
What kind of poor women is she talking about, or who is she writing about in this collection?
I mean, it's kind of interesting because she, the book was published in 1928, and in some subsequent editions, so kind of like 1929, 1930, she added a note that was entitled Mary Pity Women with an exclamation mark. She was very fond of exclamation marks. And it was basically, it was almost like a unifying concept for the book, and said that she had set out to represent people or women who were single and unsupported. And, you know, she remarked on how difficult it could sometimes be for women, you know, without the means to support themselves, to maintain their self-respect. I mean, that's really what she's given us. So, you know, the opening story in that collection. So this is basically Nora Holt announcing herself to the world as a writer.
That's very brave to take on themes like that, I would have thought.
Absolutely.
And the sort of thing that it would have been a very good reason to have a writer like that silenced and disappeared very nicely. Let's just nip those books out of the way and let's not talk too much
absolutely.
About them.
Definitely, uncomfortable, really uncomfortable subjects. And she had a kind of particular way of presenting them where, you know, she didn't. Sometimes you'd start to feel sorry for a character, you know, because, you know, that's very often the circumstances. She presented them very plainly, you know, and it was in a third person point of view. But they didn't really indulge in self-pity because very often, you know, their day-to-day difficulties are so absorbing that they don't really have time to be lying around, you know, thinking about how terrible their lot is, you know. I think there's maybe something about how, It's sort of confrontation or something. Just the idea that, you know, you're not invited to make any moral judgment at all. It's just like, here you go, this is it.
She makes no moral judgment. I suppose it's the kind of the journalistic training within her, perhaps, where she goes, here is the story, here's what happens to the character, and here's what happens next.
Yeah, and then you make your own conclusions.
And that's there in the second story, the one I've mentioned already, 9 years is a long time. This is the one with the middle-aged couple. And she's the sex worker, but it's they seem quite happy to let that happen in order to survive.
Yeah, they're sort of happy enough. I mean, in a sort of odd way, it seems like, you know, the husband is, you know, he's an easygoing sort of a fella. He's just sitting around, and his main concern is that, oh, you know, if this client of hers doesn't turn up, I won't have any money for tobacco. And she's quite happy, you know, to be able to make all the financial decisions in the house. Yeah.
And again, extraordinary that she does this, which I guess is part of the style. She just presents the story almost, if you like, as facts of the, you know, here are the facts of the story.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to make any moral judgment of it. That again, a story, but you're suggesting as a final and third offering here, there were no windows. What this is a full novel, 1944.
There Were No Windows is set during the Blitz in 1944, and it's about, it's loosely based on the life of the writer Violet Hunt, and it's about a woman kind of sliding into dementia while the bombing is going on, the worst of the bombing is going on. And I mean, it sounds terrible to say it, but it's actually hilarious, but also absolutely devastating.
Yeah, well, three very interesting stories. Let me just finally congratulate you on the news announced yesterday, your fellowship at the Seamus Heaney Centre at Queen's University Belfast.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm so happy. It's great. Yeah.
Yourself really and Padraig Regan. Will this allow
and
you
Padraig
to...
Padraig Regan, yeah.
Will you be going further into Holt's work, or are you heading off to look at something else?
I might be looking at something else.
Oh.
I might be going a bit further north, yeah.
Going a bit further north. Can you tell me more, or will I just have to wait for...
I don't know, yeah. We'll see what happens, but yeah, they'd be doing something Belfasty, I think.
Belfasty, okay, fair enough. Well, listen, great to speak with you this evening, Louise, and thanks for giving us those suggestions around Nora Holt. There Were Windows, the novel from 1944, 9 years is a Long Time, short story from 1938, and the short story collection, Poor Women, from 1928. Sounds like a fascinating writer, it must be said. And thanks to Louise Kennedy for opening our minds up to that. That is our lot for this evening. Leah Murphy and Paula Shields research. Janice Murphy was the broadcast coordinator. Jamie Doyle was on sound this evening. And tonight's programme produced by Sinead Egan. Talk to you tomorrow night at 7.